Hello, this is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Before we get rolling with Ron Baker and Zach Bush, a couple notes to help you through some technical difficulties. At one point, we discuss injuries endured by the 2013 Shockers. To be clear, Evan Wessel played in 8 games that season before injury shut him down the rest of the way. And then late in the podcast, we are discussing the Aftershocks roster. We begin talking about Asbjørn Midtgaard, and some of that got cut off. He did indeed play 3 seasons at Wichita State before transferring to Grand Canyon and finishing up there. He will be on the Aftershocks roster. We have some new music as we start the 7th year of the Roundhouse podcast, anticipating a new school year. Thanks for listening and enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast with Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communication. Thanks for listening. Today's guests are Ron Baker and Zach Bush. We're going to kick off the 2013 Final Four reunion that is coming up and the Aftershocks playing in the basketball tournament at Koch Arena. Ron and Zach, of course, both played on the 2013 Shockers, who won the West Region and advanced to the Final Four in Atlanta. Zach is also the coach of the Aftershocks. They open play in the TBT on July 20th versus the B1 Ballers. Ron is working on the alumni reunion portion of the weekend, which is highlighted by a dinner at Mark Arts on July 22nd. And I'll stick the links in the show notes for people who are interested in those events. So let's start with a 10-year update. Ron, you live here in Wichita. Tell us what you're doing.
Thanks for having us, Paul. It's nice to be back in Wichita. Post-career, I moved here in 2021 and started my new career with Ascension Via Christi Sports Medicine in August. And working with them has been great. We actually have a pretty sweet relationship with Wichita State, Newman University, and local high schools here in town. So it's good to be part of the community and be back home.
And Zach, you are moving to Omaha after a successful stint as assistant coach at Andover High. Tell us about your move to Nebraska.
Yeah, my fiance is from Wichita, Jalen Agnew, and she, after a playing career, she's been in the WNBA and then playing overseas and just decided to hang it up after a couple injuries and is taking a job at Creighton. So I know that's dangerous territory for a Shocker, but we're headed to Omaha, and I'm really lucky to have gotten on with a great high school basketball program up there, Bellevue West, and in the building as a PE teacher as well. So it's been awesome in Wichita. It's bittersweet leaving. I love being here, you know, born and raised, and this is, you know, home. So it'll be tough being away, but love getting to come back, you know, in the summers and, you know, probably still be doing this.
All right, very exciting. Both of you moving on with your careers. So let's fast forward to the reunion when all the guys are getting back together. Who has the best memory from that team? Who's the guy that's going to take the lead in telling the stories? Who's going to do the impression of one of the assistant coaches? Who gets the details mostly correct from that time?
I think it's safe to say a majority of the guys that were on that team are really good storytellers. I don't know how good, but they sure as heck can tell a story. I would say Clay Anthony and Fred would probably be my top two to give the best impressions and highlights from that wonderful stint we had in that tournament. I think the coolest thing is there's 9 guys coming back, so majority are going to be here and everyone's going to get a chance to reminisce.
Okay, hit us with a few of the names, and then Zach, we'll get to you. Who's coming back
that people can look forward to? Looking at the roster right now, there's 9 of us. CJ Lufiel will be back. Demetric Williams, who lives here in town. Nick Wiggins, Fred, Tekel, myself, and Clee Anthony. So there's the 8 that I see on this roster, and then Evan Wessel, who was on that roster but injured. We'll be here as well.
Okay, excellent. Okay, Zach, who's going to be the prime storyteller on Saturday night after a few adult beverages?
I think, Ron, you're discounting and forgetting how great of an impressionist I am. but that's your answers are understandable. So I'm probably going to go with Klee as well. You know, Klee's got such a great personality, and you know, I'm sure he's got it all locked in his memory. Fred's a pretty safe answer as well. that's the interesting part, is you don't really know till we get there. And those adult beverages, like you said, you know, you maybe get a few of those in some guys. And I think those stories do just start flowing, and especially the impressions. You know, we used to have a dinner every year where we'd have to do an impression out at Flint Hills. We'd have dinner out there with Tom Devlin, and we'd get put on the spot at the time. I don't know if guys necessarily wanted to do impressions, but I'd like to say that's where my acting career really started. And blossomed, I would say, over the course of my career. So I'm interested to see, you know, what guys bring it.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing about reunions is people change. So you may have somebody who's been holding something in for 10 years, ready to get it out there, and Saturday night may be the time.
Also, unlike teams now, the transfer portal, yada, 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 not a lot of guys stay 4 years out of school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll talk about this season a lot, but other than Klee, Nick, and CJ, those guys are two-year guys. A lot of these guys were here 4 years, so something will get brought up, and everyone's like, oh, man, I kind of forgot about that. And that'll take you down a rabbit hole and lead you to stories that you haven't thought about in 5-6 years.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I was going to ask that later, as you're fairly recent college student-athletes, but so much has changed in the last 3 or 4 years. And you brought up something I think about a lot. You two have the 4 or 5 year memories, and there are a lot of athletes who are kind of punting on that, and maybe for good reasons. How do you think what do you think they may miss or regret at their 10 year reunion or their 20 year reunion? Where do they go to those reunions, you know, if they were at 2 or 3 different schools?
Yeah, I'd say they'd go, just depending on their relationships with their teammates. The cool thing about being out of school for 4 years is there are other players that are there for 3 and 4 and not 5 years. So your relationship gets stronger over time, and you become closer with those individuals. And that's what creates a good culture that you want to come back to.
For sure. I think time, just, you know, like anything, time is something that builds a relationship. And not to say you can't do that in 1 or 2 years. And like you said, there's, you know, plenty of guys who have great reason to transfer. But I think there's something special about being in one place for 4 or 5 years. Like, it's hard to replicate building those relationships. It's harder to do it, I think, in a short amount of time. Whereas you're, you know, at one place, it just becomes a little more special to you. I'm sure, you know, for Ron and myself, Evan, Fred, any, you know, Tekel, any guy that was here, you know, 4 years plus, there's something special about that, and the amount of people and players, I think, that you're able to interact with.
It'll be interesting to look back in 10 years and see how this has evolved and how some of these athletes from the current time think about all that. It's certainly a big time of change in NCAA basketball, NCAA sports. Let's play some Final Four trivia to get rolling. We'll test your memories. So I will remind people, the 2013 Shockers went 30-9. They finished second in the Missouri Valley Conference, one game behind Creighton. They were seeded 9th in the NCAA tournament, beat number 1 Gonzaga in Salt Lake City to advance to the Sweet 16, beat Ohio State in Los Angeles to move to the Final Four before losing to Louisville in the national semifinals. Who was the leading scorer for the Pittsburgh Panthers, the first-round opponent, mostly guarded by Tekel Cotton, who shot 1-for-12 from the field? Remember his name. Fine player. Like all Big East kind of guys.
Yeah, 4-year player.
Is it Gibbs?
No.
This is tough, Paul.
That was kind of
known you would bring out something.
I do know Steven Adams was on that team.
He was, yes.
Obviously an NBA bet, but nope, you got me there.
Trey Woodall.
Trey Woodall, yes.
Okay. Really good player, and Tekel was just superb that day. Really put his defense on display.
That was such a fun, I just remember that, like, that NCAA tournament moment, one of those first media timeouts. Fred came running off, and in the timeout just said something like, yo, like, we are beating these guys. Like, we are so much better than these guys. You never know. Like, you play that team from, you know, completely different conference, different part of the country. You have no understanding, you know, really about who they really are on the floor. You've watched film, you know, you look at the numbers and stuff. But, like, you get out there, and then you get a feel. And it was I just remember that so vividly. It was cool that confidence came out of, you know, after, you know, 4 to 8 minutes of the game, like, you could just tell we are tougher, we are better coached, we play better together, like, our style. He just fully believed, and that was cool. I just vividly remember that. I don't know if you remember that at all, but I thought that was pretty sweet.
All those NCAA games, really every game we ever watched film on, you'd watch film on Woodall, and you're like, oh my gosh, we haven't faced a guy like this all year.
They look unbelievable.
Every highlight is him giving some dude buckets and scoring 30, it looks like, in every game. And then you get out there on the floor and you're like, these guys are just like us, or if not, we're better. So
tell me if this was your experience, because I always enjoyed covering Wichita State in those days for the Eagle, going to the holiday tournaments, because I got to sit courtside, and you would always go into those and you would think, well, they're, you know, LSU or Iowa, these guys are going to be really athletic and really big. And then when you got a close look at them, I almost always walked out of those tournaments going, boy, Wichita State is just better coached and a better team unit than a lot of these prominent schools are playing. Did you feel the same way?
I always felt like we were so more tight-knit than any team. And out of conference, I felt like our conference in the Valley was always tight-knit, like more structured, more well-rounded, more well-coached, did all the little things. And then when you got out there, you would think that they were better athletes than what we had, but and there was times like, man, like, this guy's guarding so-and-so from LSU or Iowa, and you're like, we're the same. We're all competitive just like them and just as athletic at some of those events.
I think there were so many times, too, that it showed, like, we got out there and you could just tell, like you said, we were more tight-knit, but the style of basketball we played was so much different than some of these Power 5 schools because – you know, they're so much more dependent on their athleticism and their skill solely. It's less system-oriented. And it just felt like we could pick that apart and exploit that by the way we defended and guys' mentalities going into the game. It was always kind of unique to see that.
Yeah, I could only feel us being just as talented or just as athletic once you got out on the court for the game. Like, every time leading up to a game, you're just like, oh, my goodness.
A little
like,
nervous.
These guys are freaks, like, 7 foot here, touching the top of the backboard there. Like, but once you got out there playing, like, they have five guys. We have five guys. Yeah. The ultimate goal is to score more than them. And you just – your mindset is just to simplify the game. And by the time the first TV time I came, those nerves are gone. You're like, these guys are just like us. Like,
why, just playing ball now.
Why did I stress myself out so much prior to this game?
And I would agree, it always made me think more highly of Missouri Valley Conference teams after watching those tournaments that, you know, Ben Jacobson or Marty Simmons or whoever, Greg McDermott, some of the better coaches in the Valley, that you really had a sense for the differences in how those programs were run. How many three-pointers did the Shockers make against Gonzaga?
Is it like 19?
Tequil had three or four. I had four, I think.
You got hot, kind
of. Fred, maybe the big Fred one, had one.
Fred had the big one on Stockton, right in front of the bench.
I would guess high teens, probably.
14.
Oh,
14 of 28.
50%.
Kind of felt like more.
It did. They all came in a spurt.
Right. It was. I swear that last like 8 minutes of the game, it felt like boom, boom, boom.
Was it like 6 for 7 the last?
Something. There was like 7 or 8 offensive possessions that were just about perfect. Who did Wichita State beat in the first game in Los Angeles, the Sweet 16 game?
LaSalle.
Okay, very good. A lot of they seem to be the overlooked,
forgotten
team.
Yeah.
Yes, everyone remembers the other games.
I remember that obviously because we played them, but I also remember that foursome of teams played in Kansas City prior to us, and it was Marshall Henderson at Ole Miss. I forget who they knocked off. I think it was K-State. Or LaSalle beat K-State.
LaSalle beat K-State.
Okay, so I don't know who the 3 or 4 was, but looking at that side of the bracket, it almost, if you could do it all over again, I wish we would have played K-State, just being from Kansas. And
I
always reminisce about that in the back of my head, like how cool it would have been to play Magruder and those guys from K-State.
In 14, too, we'd have had the chance, but Kentucky beats them.
Right.
Correct.
Right. Sometimes the bracket unfolds in strange ways.
Right, yep.
Staples Center in Los Angeles. Which NBA team's locker room did the Shockers occupy? I remember this being a thing.
I do. We were pretty disappointed that
we got the Clippers.
Either the Clippers or the hockey team. I can't remember.
I think it was
the Clippers.
Was it?
Okay. Yeah.
I just know it wasn't the Lakers because Klay Anthony was complaining all week about not being able to sit in Kobe's locker room.
I think Fred was a little disappointed too. I was just pumped. I wanted to see Chris Paul's locker.
Yeah.
That was that was an item of conversation. How many games did Ron Baker play in that season?
I got hurt in game 10 and then played all the games in the Valley.
Dang, boy.
Tournament. So 10 plus 3 plus 5, I believe. 18?
18, very good. 15 starts. Yeah, that's perhaps an item of that season. Yeah, you got hurt in Tennessee, right?
Correct. That, yeah. Right? It was game 10 because it was close to the medical redshirt number, which is 10 games. So I could have medicaled that year.
Wow, I never knew. Did you even think about it?
How it unfolded was I was in a boot for 6 weeks, and rehab was going to be 6 weeks, and that would have got us to the first round of the NCAA tournament. Mm. And Todd Fagan, our athletic trainer, rehabbed me for 5 to get me ready for the Valley tournament the week before.
So, yeah, rolled into the Valley tournament against Missouri State, 5 of 7 from the field, 15 points. So that was a good return. That was a big part of that team that perhaps has been lost to the memories a little bit. Who grabbed what I would consider the biggest offensive rebound of the NCAA tournament? Shockers up 65-61 against Ohio State with 1:34 to play. Fred VanVleet misses a shot. Who got that rebound?
It was on a free throw.
No, jumper.
Oh, was it a jumper? Yeah. It was Tekel Cotton.
Very good.
Right up of at course the free it was. Throw line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course it's Tekel.
In my memory, that was pretty close to where we were sitting on press row, and I thought he just...
I didn't think he was, maybe.
That's my memory.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was going to get it. It was a couple big guys from Ohio State, and he...
Well, he could jump up really high. I don't know if you're...
I had seen him jump a few times. But
no, he's not known for that. But.
Yeah.
Right. Another little-known thing. Tekel Cotton could really jump. How do you think the Final Four changed Shocker basketball? You both have stuck around. You're involved with the program. How did it change things at Wichita State?
Obviously, any team that makes the Final Four, it brings a spotlight to them. Us being the ones that got bounced in the Final Four, everybody knew we were bringing back pretty much everybody other than a few key big guys. So I think the spotlight becomes, well, what are these guys going to do now? Are guys going to transfer? Are they going to stay tight-knit? So I think the focus shifted really quickly after that loss to, wow, this future is pretty bright here. So the spotlight's bigger. How are these guys going to, I guess, turn the corner from such a great run? So I think the national spotlight becomes bigger and people want to see how players respond when they're the highlight of a college basketball season.
Yeah. Shoot, I can just, remember it changed things. Like, you guys really became, like, celebrities, not even just within the state, but, nationally, like, national radio shows and, ESPN love. It was no longer, I remember growing up here how it was. We had, good teams. I can remember, pretty well the Sweet 16 with Turgeon and those guys, but this was... this was different. Like within the community, even there was a glow. That was my, redshirt year. So I'd get here and it was like Wichita State basketball. Yeah. Solid program. And then everything became like, you guys, we go to the mall and we almost couldn't, like, you guys get stopped or we got to dinner and everybody wants a picture, wants an autograph. And, it just, I think from a local perspective, we weren't just that, that's a, mid-major program. Yeah, they're pretty good. Like, it's still KU, K-State.
Exactly what I was about to say is nationally, I recall prior to us making the Final Four, the mid-major term was always used.
Mm-hmm.
And then when some of these smaller schools were making runs in the tournament, I remember Greenberg and Jay Billis, like, they stopped using the mid-major term.
So this doesn't apply to them really.
This doesn't apply
anymore.
To Gonzaga. Yeah. It doesn't apply to us. They stopped using that term, and there was no low major, there was no mid major. It was just I just remember it kind of becoming one college basketball.
Yeah.
We fit into that college basketball talk.
Had credibility, I think. Just gave you a lot of credibility.
Let me go back to that Tekel Cotton offensive rebound. I kind of cut off before I explained the significance of it. So Wichita State was up 65-61 when Fred missed a three. Tekel got the rebound, and then Fred made a jumper after that with a minute to go. So that put the Shockers up 6, and they ended up winning that game. So a huge possession. Shockers ended up winning 70-66 to go to the Final Four. Was there a national media member that you really enjoyed being around, that you thought really got the Shockers, that was really effective at his or her job at that point?
You're not national, but obviously you. I mean,
I'm just besides me. Yeah.
There was like Zach hit the nail on the head. There's just a ton of media always around once we got to L.A. And then the following year, even getting to St. Louis on the undefeated season, there was always media wanting into the locker room, it felt like. I don't know if there was like a favorite, but one of my favorite memories of talking to the media was after we beat Ohio State. It just so happened to be my birthday. And Chris Webber and the TNT crew were courtside, and it's just a pinch you moment.
Mm-hmm.
Ex-NBA player, great, all-star, is asking you the questions.
Yeah.
Whereas as a kid, deep down, you wanted to be the one asking him all these questions about his career. And the script kind of flipped, and that was a moment that I'll always cherish.
Yeah. I don't know so much like media in terms of, you know, sports writers and stuff. It is hard to remember because, you know, when you're the VCU, the George Mason, you know, of... You know, that just happened. There's so much, and so it all kind of runs together. But it did feel like we suddenly had, like I said, I use the word credibility, but we kind of were in, and that was cool to see. And even, you know, going into the next season, I remember Myron Metcalf, I feel like, really liked us, just thinking back. But
ESPN, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think right. He, you know, was kind of, he still did have doubters that are, you know, like, they had a great run, but, you know, they're not on the level of some of these other programs. And we still heard that. And that, I think, absolutely fed us. And, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of pissed us off. Like, we wanted that full credibility. Like, even if you're not going to call us mid-major, you still look at us maybe like, that was a cute run. You know, anybody can get lucky in the tournament type thing. But like you said, Chris Webber was sweet. I remember meeting Reggie Miller, and I did like the little choke thing like he did. He didn't think that was as funny as I did. It kind of hurt, but yeah. And then seeing Jim Nance, like, that was surreal. That was one of those for me, like, pinch me moments. And you know how it is, Bake. Like, we grew up watching the tournament, and it, for me, that was one of the best weeks of the year. Like, you sit down and you watch every single game, and it's just, you like have to really look around. You know, we play in Salt Lake first that year, and I had to immediately go to the spot where MJ hit the shot in 98, and just all those little cool things. It was, you know, getting off on a tangent here, sorry Paul, but it was surreal.
Have you watched any of those games recently? You ever cue them up on the old, I guess it's not a VCR anymore, YouTube or wherever they exist?
The last time I watched a game from this year, I want to say, would have been at Coach Marshall's house when we had Landry Shamet on a visit over the Labor Day weekend. Coach always had the games rolling. But since then, I may have caught a couple highlights here and there on YouTube or God knows where, but that's the last time I remember watching like a full game.
Are we talking solely from the Final Four run?
No, it doesn't have to be.
I don't know. I'm weird. I go back and from time to time, like that KU one's obviously special to us. I'll go back and some of them are on YouTube, the KU ones in like German or something. So it's a little hard to listen to, but yeah, I've gone back a couple times and just throw it on like late at night board. It's kind of cool to even look at the different length of shorts from our era to now.
What's the highlight from that season that sticks out in your mind?
From the Final Four season?
Yeah, just the first thing that
this is,
maybe
this
pops
is
in.
Going deep is we hit rock bottom that year.
Oh, yeah.
That's my highlight. We had three starters hurt at one point, and I recall a stretch where we lost three conference games in a row.
Yep, right here.
I know it was Evansville was one. Indiana State was another.
The three stretches. Indiana
three
State,
stretch.
U and I,
there
Southern.
Yep.
And we lose
at Southern
on that goaltend.
Yeah.
The goaltend by Ahime.
So, yeah.
And we were down bad. Yeah. Everyone was kind of feeling sorry for themselves. I remember two pre- and post-practice meetings where Coach Marshall, Coach Jans, and the staff were just like, y'all realize like how good we are? Like, this could be special. Mm-hmm. Over and over they kept telling us, like, this could be special.
And where things were at that point. Like, we're 8-1 in league
sitting,
before that.
Sitting good, and we dropped those three games, and then it got to the point where guys were down on themselves so bad that our video coordinator, we didn't even watch film for the next opponent. He brought in a 12-minute clip of all those games from when we were 8-1, and
look at how you could
see
the ball.
You could see our body language was better. Our the attention to detail, the little things that we were doing so well at the beginning of the season, we just weren't doing it during conference. And from there forward, like, you could see the engine started revving. And when adversity hits, that sometimes can be the best highlight of a season, because you're forced to respond, and however you respond is where you're going to get to. And obviously it sparked our engines. And I truly think those meetings post those three games really fed into where we got to that season.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of my lowlights are all you guys getting hurt, and I'm a true freshman practicing far more than I should be. Just terrified out there. Carl Hall, and you know, he's hurt. Hajime. But yeah, I remember losing those games and thinking, you know, you start to catch on, you listen, you watch ESPN, and you start hearing, you know, the Shockers and how great of a non-con we had. Would we go 10-1, whatever.
8-0 at one point,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Lose losing only, to Tennessee. Yeah, and we're in that game. It's not like there was a bad loss. And so I think you're starting to feel like, wow, you know, get an at-large bid type thing, and you lose those games, you don't know how it's going to go. So that season was not perfect. Like, a lot of fans remember the Final Four, but it was tough, man. There was struggle, and then even you lose the last two in a row, you know, having Evan out for a period and Carl out for a period and you out, and just trying to find ourselves again. I think that's tough. Guys' roles change, you know, because of the injuries. So that's hard for guys to adjust. But I don't even know how we did it looking back. Like, it's kind of crazy looking at this right. schedule.
So Ron would have missed a good chunk of the season. Yeah. Carl Hall missed, I think, 8 games. Ahime was hurt, and Evan got hurt in the preseason before the season. I thought that team, there were three versions of that team. There was the non-conference version that was, you know, whatever, 8-0, 9-0, very, very good. And then the injuries hit a little bit, so they got through the Missouri Valley Conference season. And then there was the tournament version of that team when Ron came back and gave what I thought that team was really good, or could be really good defensively, and then Ron added a little bit of scoring that team needed. So
I I got to interrupt, Paul. I do remember the biggest low light maybe of that season at Creighton. I don't know how this final score was 79-91, because it felt like we got beat by 30.
40.
It was like off rip too, like Doug McDermott's just going crazy. We're putting Tekel, we're putting Carl, we're putting everybody.
Anybody.
Yeah, it didn't matter. And like, Grant Gibbs had that one. He's falling out of bounds and just throws the ball up over his head. He's falling backwards from the sideline in front of their bench, throws it up overhand like a soccer, you know, throwing, and it goes in. So that was like, golly. So that was also, I know we're talking highlights, but big low light there.
Really good Creighton team with Doug McDermott, as you mentioned. Excellent Creighton team. Those would have been really good games. Shockers had a chance to wrap up at least a tie for the Valley title at home against Evansville, and I believe that was Greg Marshall's 50th birthday. So that was, and then lost that game. So that was another part of that story. What a great group of newcomers! I would say it would be up there with one of the best that Wichita State has had. You had Clay Anthony coming in as a junior college transfer. Malcolm Armstead had sat out the previous season. Fred coming in as a freshman, and then Ron had redshirted the previous season. First impressions of those three. Anything jump out from the first time you were in a gym or in a practice with Clay Anthony or Fred or Malcolm?
I missed Nick Wiggins. CJ as well. CJ,
right.
I just remember it being our first pickup game in June that summer. And my dad was super excited because this is going to be my first year being eligible to play. And I remember him texting me in June. Just like, hey, how are the new guys? Like, what's it gonna look like this year? And I'm like, Dad, these three JUCO recruits they're unbelievable. They're athletic, long, can score, big with CJ. And I'm like, how did we get first and foremost? How did we get these three guys? Like, this is crazy. And I just remember pickup being like, oh my goodness, like, these guys are elite. Like, how does Wichita State land these guys? Those are kind of my first impressions going into that summer with my communication with my dad. I remember it like yesterday.
I remember first pickup game, you know, with these guys too. That was the, especially Klee. Klee just stuck out with his length and how he could shoot the ball. And I remember saying the same thing to my parents, like, man, we got, like, some of these dudes are, this, yeah, this isn't quite what I imagined when, you know, I was, you know, thinking I'm coming here. These guys are big time. And even you, you know, we, if people don't know, Ron and I played for the same AAU program. And so Ron's going into his senior year of high school, going into my junior year of high school, you know, seeing Ron then and then jump forward, you know, a year and a half or change, seeing what he'd become was pretty surreal. So even you were, you know, really impressive physically. All the guys, just obviously the speed of the game is different from high school to college, but you wouldn't, you know, in my mind, I'm coming into more of a quote-unquote mid-major program, but the size of these dudes, like he said, like C.J. LaFeel and Kadeem Colby, who couldn't play that year, was just a rock, chiseled. And so, yeah, the size was impressive, but the skill in those first couple individuals or pickup games was just kind of surreal.
How was Malcolm Armstead able to come in and contribute what he did? He'd been around the previous season sitting out, but hadn't practiced, if I'm remembering that right. He was here, but wasn't practicing.
It was kind of an odd year for Mal, the year we sat out together. I'd also contribute kind of our chemistry. The times he was here, I always got to play with him on the scout team because neither of us were going to play that first year when we were here. So obviously super talented, probably the best player on the court other than maybe Teray Murray and a, you know, Raglan maybe, but wow, very talented, had been to some high major programs, was tight-knit with the staff, and just kind of had that swag to him, like, I'm gonna beat you. He kind of had the Fred VanVleet chip on his shoulder. And like you said, he was kind of in and out that first year, but towards the end of the season, he was here, and he just seemed like a fun guy to play with, high IQ. And I knew I was going to be his best friend coming into that next season. And I contribute a lot of that chemistry to that first year we sat out.
And if I'm remembering correctly, the relationship between he and Fred turned out to be really important. The story goes toward the end of the year, because Fred was not, he was a reserve and then really started to come on last half of the season, last third of the season, whatever. And Malcolm, I think at one point said, Fred needs to play more. Get me off the ball, you can get Fred off the ball. What was their relationship like, and how important was it to the team?
I will say those two were pit bulls. They didn't like being on the same team. They always wanted to play against each other when it came to pickup and scout team. And it was kind of like a little brother, big brother battle every day from what I recall. But you're exactly right. Late in the season, we started playing Fred a lot more because there was trust. He had grown so much in that season, and putting Malcolm off the ball was I think a big reason why we won a lot of those games. Both of them, I believe, led the team in steals per minutes played throughout that season. So you're looking at two great defensive guys to have on the field, or excuse me, the court, and just gelled really well together. And that's what happens when you have two super IQ guys on the court. And not to mention, in college basketball, if you can have two ball handlers that can make great decisions, I mean, you're one guard up on the opponent half the time, which was huge.
And Malcolm would have hit one of the biggest shots of the season very early in the season when he beat VCU at VCU. And I think that was the game that, even when the Shockers struggled late in the Valley season, they had that VCU chip in their back pocket, and it got them in the NCAA tournament fairly safely. All right, Zach, let's switch to the aftershocks. Take us through the roster. What do you like about this group that's been assembled?
Yeah, so, you know, very similar group to what we've had these past couple of years. You've got Samaje, Connor, Marcus. We've got, help me out here, Ron, I don't have the list
Trey
in front
Wade.
Of me. But yeah, I mean, new guy, yeah, Trey Wade.
Al-Tariq Gilbert.
Yeah, Al-Tariq's a new one coming in. We're really excited about Trey and Al-Tariq. Trey played in this last year with the Arkansas team, and I'd spoken with their the guy that coaches them, and he had said how hard it was to just bring him off the floor at times because he kind of has that Rashard Kelly presence where he does the little things, the dirty work, and makes the right play. Al-Tariq, you know, starting to blossom a little bit in his professional career. He's always been so talented, and I think fans, that was a fun fifth-year transfer for fans to have. But Darrell Willis back again. We're super excited for Machine Gun Willis. It's a super fun group, and then, added a couple non-alumni guys like we typically do. We really wanted James Dickey back. Fans loved him last year. He was, our big guy from UNC Greensboro, but he unfortunately was on a family vacation that was planned way back when. And, you know, those guys spend so much time overseas, you can't be upset at somebody for that. So we got Marcus Lee, who fans might remember. He was on the Kentucky team in 2014. Didn't play against us. Willie Cauley got hurt or something happened. And then the next game when they played, I think it was Michigan, Marcus had to play and played really well. And then later in his career ended up transferring and playing at Cal, who we played in Maui. And so Marcus is a great guy, friend of a friend, and he's going to add quite a bit of length for us. And then Tyrus McGee is back. And then we're excited to add Caleb Walker, who some fans might remember. You got to jog your memory a little. But Caleb played at Hutch High back in around 08 and then was at Butler for 2 years and then at University of Nebraska. He played against Marcus this year in France. So a little bit of a connection there. And then a guy named Jordan Parks, who Marcus played with 2 years ago in Italy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, excited to have Asbjorn back. He, I think, blossomed in his – was it a year or 2 years at Grand Canyon? How long was he there?
I think he was year three and then two at Grand Canyon.
Okay, yeah. Just excited to have him. His size last year, we get to the semis and we're in the game. We got a chance to win it at the end, but we got bullied a little bit all game. We didn't have the size. And so he's a guy, he's in great shape. He's young. He adds that presence down there on the block.
Yeah, that'll be fun to see him. I think he was a player the fans really, really enjoyed watching. How has the roster building, the recruiting for the Aftershocks, how's that changed from maybe two seasons ago? You've had a lot of success. How do you approach it now?
Same way. I don't think a ton has changed. It's for the most part, kind of that same core group. It hurts not having Zach and Rashard this year, but we approach it the same way, like, hey, this is a pretty unique chance to play back in front of the fans who love you guys. The experience is second to none. Like, even within TBT, Dayton is the only other, regional that even comes close. And we feel like we've got the best, kind of setup in this. And then you add in the moments that have happened, Connor's game winners, Daryl's game winner. And I think everybody remembers 2 years ago against Challenge ALS, the green team, just how much fun that was. So we try to remind the guys, it's hard. They have busy summers and short summers, really. And so sometimes it's tough trying to get them back here. But we really, I think, want to strike the right combination of alumni guys that fans want to see. We certainly, that's in the forefront of our mind. We want to give them the group that they want to see, but we also have to combine that with a team that wants to compete and win this. We're not just coming here to play a couple games at Coke. We are in this because we feel like we have a chance to win it, and we've gotten closer and taken the right steps every year. So that's kind of the way the roster is constructed, the way it is.
Okay. Zach Bush, Ron Baker, thank you for your time. We've got TBT at Coke Arena next week. And then on July 22nd, Armchair Strategies, the NIL collective that helps out Wichita State, is holding the Final Four reunion at Mark Arts. Thanks for your time, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Paul.
Hi, this is Rick Miuma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Great insight, as always. Thanks for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can always find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.